First case to be heard this morning is number 2007-2101, AEI Net Lease Income and Growth Fund versus Erie County Board of Revision. Mr. Ray.
May it please the court. My name is Nicholas Ray, law firm Siegel, Siegel, Johnson & Jennings. We represent the property owner in this case. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time, Mr. Ray.
Your Honor, this case presents an issue of first impression for the court's review as a result of the blanket application of the court's Berea and subsequent decisions. Can a sale of the property encumbered by a non-arm's-length lease that resulted from a sale leaseback transaction be used to value the property for real property tax purposes?
Let me ask you, Mr. Ray, does this case differ materially from the Rhodes versus Hamilton County Board of Revision case?
It does, Your Honor. There was no discussion in Rhodes, and Rhodes did not result from a sale leaseback transaction. This case results from a sale leaseback transaction. Initially, the lease does. As well, the discussion here results or discusses whether or not that lease, which was not arm's length at the time of its inception, nor was it ever an arm's length lease, that forms the basis of the subsequent sale, can be used to value real estate.
So just so I'm clear on this, the sale leaseback, the tax year at issue here is 2004, is it?
Correct, Your Honor.
Now, the sale leaseback you're referring to was entered into in late 03?
It was, yeah, November of 03.
Okay, but and the sale that the Board of Revision used for valuation was in 04?
In May of 04.
Okay.
And there was an original complaint bought on the 03. The Board of Revision looked at the 03 value, or the 03 sale, rejected it as an indication of value because it was a sale leaseback transaction. 6 months later, the property transfers again, subject to that original lease that resulted from the sale leaseback transaction. And that is the transaction that's before the court today.
So when you say the not arm's length character, you're referring to which sale?
To the lease.
To the lease.
That results from the sale leaseback transaction.
Okay.
And again, in a typical sale leaseback transaction, as is in the case here, the Applebee's franchise owned the restaurant, entered into a sale leaseback transaction in the November transaction, sold this property along with 25 others to the buyer in a sale leaseback transaction. Mr. Uhlberg from the Applebee's franchisee testified as to the initiation of that transaction and the lease that resulted from the sale leaseback transaction. Did not meet the requirement. You have the owner setting the lease rates in order to generate the amount to be realized from the sale. That's what Mr. Uhlberg testified to. That lease is in place in November of 03, as well as being in place in May of 04. That transfer then, based upon that lease rate, which this court's jurisprudence on sale leaseback transactions have equated to a financing transaction, that paper is then effectively sold in May of 04, and that is the transfer before the board as we speak.
When you say financing, you mean financing to construct the restaurant?
It's a financing transaction to generate cash for the business operations of the Applebee's franchisee. And again, as you look at a long line of decisions from this court as it related to sale leaseback transactions, the court has consistently rejected sale leaseback transactions, both because of an arm's length concern, the lease rate can really be what the seller decides it's going to be, and the sale then is inherently unreliable, as well as the fact that it's not the result of a market transaction, not an open market, I'm sorry.
And in the cases that you're talking about, were those cases where the issue was whether the sale, the amount allocated to the sale and the sale leaseback was used for valuation, or did it involve the issue that I think you're raising today of the lease rate?
Yeah, I think it's the reason this is a unique situation. Those prior cases didn't as much involve an allocation as much as it whether or not the sale leaseback, the first transaction, our November transaction in this case, should be utilized for purposes of setting value. And the court has consistently rejected those. The reason that this case really presents an issue of first impression for this court is that historically what would have happened from there, kind of pre-Berea, if you will, Berea establishes a shift, a seismic shift, if you will, as it relates to the valuation of real estate in Ohio. Prior to Berea, if this subsequent transfer would have come up, the question would have been raised under the Ratner decision, and it would have been looked at under Ratner and whether or not that underlying lease was at market rates in order to reflect the fee simple value of the property. And for a number of years under the Ratner decision, that's what we had. So it's not uncommon for companies to enter into sale leasebacks. It's a fairly common way to raise operating capital. It's also not uncommon for that original buyer to turn around and sell the property later. Historically, what would have happened is under the Ratner decision, we would have looked at the underlying lease, whether or not it was at a market rate lease or not, and then that subsequent transfer, if it was market rate, would have been accepted. If it wasn't market rate, it would have been rejected and appraisal evidence would have been looked at.
Now, we've also had some recent cases that involve this issue of the market rate of the lease, and how do they relate to your argument?
Well, I think as it relates to the market rate of the lease, at least as I interpret current Supreme Court decisions, that ship has sailed, if you will. The court has really said we're not going to look at the underlying market rate of the lease. They overturned that part of Ratner in order to say if it's a sale and it's arm's length, we're going to accept it. And that's really what the school board is here saying. Listen, we have an arm's length sale. Court says that's enough. The property owner's contention is, you know, we have a different situation here in that original lease, which the court has always looked at as a financing transaction, not being an arm's length transaction, forms the basis of the subsequent sale. Where that underlying lease is not arm's length, and that was not discussed or argued in Berea. Again, all the evidence in Berea would indicate those three leases in Berea were arm's length leases. It was not discussed in any of the Rhodes cases, Kugel, or Anchor Lions case, also out of Cincinnati, as well as the other kind of sale cases that the court has seen. Because of the overturning of Ratner in Berea, this question of whether or not the subsequent sales, which you know, have always kind of been analyzed on whether the underlying lease rate was market or not, that issue isn't there. So it's really unique, kind of first time that I'm aware of that the court's dealing with it.
When you say that the lease in this case is not at arm's length, that's what you're saying?
Yes.
In what respect is that not at arm's length, or is that different from the leases in the other cases?
Well, really what you have in a sale leaseback transaction is you have the owner-seller who's going to become the lessee setting the lease rate. So when you look at the underlying lease and the sale leaseback transaction, the owner's selling it to a buyer who's then gonna lease it right back to the owner. So they're just really kind of pulling their cash out of the real estate. And the amount of cash in this case has, you know, no resemblance, as Mr. Uhlberg testified, to market lease rates. That's not a consideration. It's based upon how much money they're going to generate out of the sale leaseback transaction. And the individual owner, if they wished, again, if sale leaseback sales are good for setting value, then an owner could easily, in this case, they're paying, let's say, $200,000 a year in rent. An owner could easily decide to pay $20,000 a year in rent, and we would have non-arm's length leases that form the basis of these sales, and it would be relatively easy to undercut your real estate taxes.
So just so I'm clear on it, when you say the lease is not at arm's length, it's because it's an integral part of the sale leaseback transaction.
Right, and really the lease rate's determined by the seller as part of the sale leaseback transaction who's also the lessee. There is not a typical transaction where the property's available on the open market, it's out there for rent, and you know, here comes the occupant who says, you know, you're asking $20 a square foot, I'll give you 15, and they end up at 17 and a half.
But the two parties to the sale leaseback transaction here, just so I'm clear on this, you're not saying that they're unrelated.
No, they're unrelated and
pursuing their own.
Your Honor, the 2004 transaction where you have the subsequent sale, the one that the court's dealing with, you know, we understand those parties are unrelated as well. The question is whether or not that subsequent transfer, again, the first transfer is no good, and I don't think anybody's arguing that it is. The subsequent transfer based upon that same lease, which the court has indicated is essentially a financing transaction, whether or not that financing transaction lease, non-arm's length, can be utilized to set value. Because there's only a single tenant property here, we're not talking about multiple leases. It's clear there's one lease. That lease results from the sale leaseback transaction. And it subsequently then transfers.
When you say it's not at arm's length and that the owner, when you say the owner sets the lease rate, you mean that the Applebee's entity originally owned the property, they sell it, they lease it back, and that they're setting this rate. And I guess my question is, wouldn't the economic interest of the other party be looking to, you know, what maximize the rate, or lease rate?
You know, they're buying an income stream from Applebee's. I mean, they're looking at the lease rate and saying, I have a 20-year lease with 4 or 5 year renewals by Applebee's, so 20 to 40 years I have this property and this income stream. And so I'm going to pay something. Yes, there's some reversion interest at the end, but that's a significant number of years out. I'm looking at this income stream. Now, Applebee's can say, I'm going to pay $200,000 a year, or they can say, I'm going to pay $20,000 a year. The buyer in the sale leaseback transaction is looking at the income stream from the property. There really isn't the same interest of, I'm selling my property, and I want to get the most out of it that I can, and the buyer wants to pay the least amount that they can. And so the reason we rely upon arm's length transactions to set value is it presumes actors acting in their own self-interest, trying to maximize the number or minimize the number to get to a right fair market value. Sale leaseback transactions, again, as this court's jurisprudence have said, over 15 years now, are really financing transactions. They're financing a lease on the property, or they're financing the property in order to take some cash out of it. It's a financing vehicle, and that's what the leases are the result of.
Okay.
The sale leaseback cases, again, most recently post Berea, where I said Berea is kind of a shift, if you will. You know, even in Strongsville post Berea, the court considered a sale leaseback transaction, and even though there were elements of duress in that case, the court favorably cited Kroger rejecting sale leaseback transactions, and we'd ask the same here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Ms. Kalail, did I pronounce that correctly?
You did. Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Carrie Kalail. I'm here on behalf of Applee Perkins Local School District Board of Education. What we would like to point out initially is that this is not a sale leaseback transaction. While the first, we've got two sales here. The property sold twice in a 2 year span. The first sale occurred on November 21st, 2003 from Apple to Preco 2 for $2,619,651. But subsequent to that, on May 12th, 2004, the property sold in what we believe is an arm's length sale between Preco and AEI Net Lease for a different sale price, $2,788,658. What is lacking in this case is any testimony from anyone who was related or involved in the second sale, the sale that is before this court today, as to whether or not it was an arm's length transaction or not. There were two witnesses. Patrick Uhlberg was employed by Apple and had no involvement or knowledge of the second sale. Appraiser Robin Lorms similarly had no involvement or no knowledge in the second sale. There was no evidence before this court to suggest that the sale was anything but arm's length. And so, quite simply, the property owner failed to meet its burden to prove that the sale did not reflect the true value of the property.
But as I understand the contention by Mr. Ray is that the amount of rent reserved in the lease, in the sale leaseback transaction, would have affected that later May 2004 sale price. And what's your response to that?
Well, if there were any witnesses that would testify to that, that might be the case. But in this case, no one was involved. No one that was involved in that sale was there to testify, present to testify. So all we have are the attorneys and the appraisers that are conjecturing what might have been or what was involved or how that sale price was arrived at. So again, we are arguing that they simply failed to meet their burden to prove the presumption that the sale price is the best evidence of value here. And at the very heart of Berea lies the rejection of appraisal evidence of the value of property whenever a recent arm's length transaction has been offered as evidence of value. And that has been subsequently upheld. And in order for this court to adopt the appellant's argument here, we would have to overrule everything that has been decided involving arm's length transactions since Berea.
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Ray is distinguishing this case by saying that the lease and the lease rate, because it's part of the sale leaseback transaction, that takes this case outside the cases that the court has already decided. Do you disagree with that, or is it simply a case of evidentiary burden?
I think it's a case of evidentiary burden. I think if we look at it, there's several cases subsequent to Berea, and in one case, in the Cummins case, there was a footnote that talked about that a sale leaseback may not furnish an arm's length sale price. However, in that case, and in this case, there must be evidence of an otherwise, in what the court said in Cummins, collusive relationship between the parties. Unfortunately, there's nothing here to suggest that. And I think Mr. Ray indicated these parties are unrelated. So we don't have anything in the record that would establish that the sale at issue was anything but an arm's length transaction, or that the buyer and the seller were not typically motivated in the marketplace. This court has had an opportunity to deal with all kinds of various peculiar circumstances surrounding sales and have continuously rejected them and upheld the sale price as the best evidence of value. We don't see any difference in this case. In Rhodes versus Hamilton County, we saw a sale encumbered by a long-term lease. The court rejected that and indicated that the sale was the best evidence of value. All of the arguments that have been presented to this court in the brief of the appellants, we think, have been answered clearly by the court in not only Cummins but in Rhodes, and most recently in Dublin, most recently in Columbus City School District and Cincinnati Board of Education, where there was no opinion rendered in those cases, but in those cases there were arguments being made as to the creditworthiness of the tenant that had some bearing on the sale and the motivation of the buyer and seller. But again, in this case, we don't have any evidence of what occurred in the transaction between the buyer and the seller. So we believe that Berea is controlling here, and that the arm's length sale between the buyer and seller here establishes the fair market value of the property.
If would there be, in your view, the possibility that a case could be proven in a situation like this, where the sale leaseback and the amount of rent reserved in the lease affected the later transaction? Would there be a possibility under current law of such a case even being proved?
I'm not sure that under the case of the current law, whether that would even be a possibility. But again, I point to what I've seen so far as a footnote that says there would have to be collusive evidence offered as to the relationship between the buyer and seller. Perhaps that's a small window, but I think that this court has been very strong in its opinions thus far that sale prices rule. I am not going to waste the court's time on this. I think I've outlined my arguments, and it's quite simple. So if you don't have any further questions, I think I'll step down from the podium at this point in time.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Kalea.
You.
Mr. Ray, you've reserved a minute, 40 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple quick things. First of all, testimony regarding the second sale. Mr. Uhlberg did testify as to his own personal experience and interaction with the seller in that case, as far as what they were interested in, what they were looking for, their access to the property for purposes of appraising it. So there is testimony from Mr. Uhlberg as to his discussion with the buyer. Secondly, Mr. Lorms in this case is an expert appraiser, and we feel that Rule of Evidence 703 regarding expert testimony clearly considers an appraiser such as Mr. Lorms providing that testimony and providing information regarding the transfer. He is an expert as it relates to the valuation of real property, and he's expressing opinions that are within his knowledge and education as it relates to these transactions and the reliability of those transactions for purposes of setting value.
What was there specific testimony by Mr. Lorms in this case? I know he testified in some of the other cases that have come before the court that related to the issue that you're focusing on, the sale leaseback. Did his study focus on that, or?
He focused on the fee simple value of the property, but he also discussed the market, and he also on page 4, I believe, of his appraisal report addresses the sale in question and why he considered it unreliable for purposes of the transactions in question. There's been an assumption or allegation made by counsel for the Board of Education that this court would have to overturn everything. I think Your Honor correctly understands at least our position. This is a unique situation where that underlying lease is not arm's length. May I conclude, Your Honor?
Yes, quickly, please.
Your Honor, the property owner respectfully submits the decision of the BTA is unreasonable and unlawful. The sale leaseback transaction, which would be rejected for purposes of setting value for the reasons of unreliability, this same transaction suffers from all of those reasons why the court rejects sale leaseback transactions. We'd request this court to find a value of $870,000, which is the value opined to by Mr. Lorms, or in the alternative to remand it back to the BTA with instructions.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.